Imagine locking this massive 10-inch solid steel vault door at your bank, right? You turn around, feeling totally secure, and you realize the exterior walls of the building are actually made of wet paper.
Yeah, that's not a comforting thought at all.
Terrifying. But that is exactly what Microsoft Edge is doing with your passwords right now. Welcome to today's deep dive. If you're joining us, it's because you, like us, want to cut through the daily noise. You're looking for those essential aha moments, you know?
Right, the real underlying mechanisms of the tech world.
Exactly, without drowning in the information overload of 100 different feeds. So today, we're pulling our sources from the May 5, 2026 edition of the Tech and AI Daily newsletter.
Which is packed today, by the way.
Oh, it's wild. Our mission today is to really map out the rapidly shifting power dynamics of our digital reality. We're going from the deeply flawed architecture of your browser security to multi-billion dollar meme stock acquisitions.
Which is still crazy to say out loud.
Right. All the way to the escalating geopolitical Cold War over AI access. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with that wet paper bank vault. Let's talk about the Microsoft Edge password vulnerability.
Yeah, so this is one of those foundational structural flaws that completely breaks your trust in local software. The newsletter highlights this rather terrifying revelation from security researchers. Basically, Microsoft Edge is storing saved passwords in clear text directly within the browser's process memory while it's running.
Wait, clear text, meaning just plain.
Raw, unencrypted, completely readable strings just floating around in your RAM,
Yep.
even passwords you haven't touched during your current browsing session.
I mean, I'm trying to understand how a modern browser, one that's shipping to hundreds of millions of users globally, makes a design choice like that. Is it just like a lazy programming habit?
It's essentially a catastrophic failure in memory management. It's likely tied to how the Chromium engine handles autofill features because, well, best practice dictates that a password should remain heavily encrypted in your local vault,
Like that
right?
lockdown.
Exactly. It should only be decrypted at the exact millisecond you need to authenticate a login. And then, crucially, that specific block of memory should be immediately wiped, just zeroed out.
So what is Edge doing instead?
What Edge is doing is decrypting the vault, but then completely failing to scrub the memory block afterward. It just drops the pointer, leaving the decrypted strings sitting in the RAM, just waiting for garbage collection.
Wow. Which means the vault door is locked, but the passwords are just sitting out on the lobby tables inside.
Exactly.
So any other process running on your machine that is memory read access, like a malicious browser extension, or I don't know, a compromised background app.
Or even legitimate software that's been hijacked.
Right. They can just scoop up that entire database of credentials without ever needing your master password.
You've got it. They don't have to break the encryption at all. They just read the open memory. And, this local vulnerability really sets the tone for a broader theme today.
Awesome.
Because if the local software we rely on to navigate the web is fundamentally leaking our data like this, it really shouldn't be surprising that the massive trusted platforms we use are doing the exact same thing on an institutional level.
Yeah, it's ironic, really. We worry so much about a hacker stealing a password, but the most sensitive information we have is just being freely handed over. The newsletter actually details a new TechCrunch report about
Oh,
this.
yeah, the healthcare one.
Yeah, showing that major U.S. healthcare marketplace operators have been quietly funneling citizenship status and racial data directly to advertising networks.
What's fascinating here is how the mechanics of this data leak actually work, because it's not a hack. It's literally the architecture of the modern web working exactly as it was designed to.
Which is the scary part?
Right. Ad tech is effectively this agnostic vacuum. It's an industry built on deploying metapixels and tracking scripts that ingest absolutely anything they can touch. We all operate under this illusion that when we log into a health insurance portal, there's this magical, impenetrable shield of HIPAA compliance protecting everything we type.
But the reality is, those ad trackers don't care about the portal's security promises at all.
Not even a little bit.
They are embedded directly into the web page code. They sit in your browser and literally scrape the form fields or monitor the keystrokes as you type out your demographic data. Citizenship, race, income, just as a byproduct of you applying for coverage.
And the kicker is, the healthcare providers themselves install these trackers to optimize their own marketing funnels. The ad networks, they don't care that it's highly sensitive medical demographic data.
They just see data.
Exactly. They just see a rich signal they can use to hyper-target you later. It really proves that the concept of a protected medical footprint is largely a myth when it bumps up against the multi-billion dollar machinery of targeted advertising.
I really want you, the listener, to pause and consider your own baseline assumptions about your digital footprint in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Because we assume the browser's memory is a fortress, and we assume the healthcare portal is a sanctuary. But the architecture beneath both is just incredibly porous.
It's all leaking.
It is. And while ad networks are strip mining this deeply personal data for pennies on the dollar, the actual heavy capital in the tech sector is moving in ways that feel, completely unhinged from reality.
Oh, absolutely.
GameStop just launched a $55.5 billion takeover bid for eBay.
Yeah, the capital markets right now are behaving in ways that seem to defy all traditional financial gravity.
I am genuinely struggling to see the fundamental logic here.
Mm.
Because GameStop is a legacy physical retail brand that barely survived a near-death experience, right?
Yep.
Buying eBay feels less like a coherent corporate strategy and more like a meme lord flushed with crypto cash just clicking add to cart on a $55 billion internet pioneer.
Yeah.
Is there actual fundamental business logic driving this?
There is a very ruthless, very specific logic to it, actually, even if it looks totally absurd on the surface. GameStop essentially won the lottery during the 2020s meme stock craze.
They really did.
They secured this astronomical treasury of capital that was completely decoupled from their actual core business, which, let's be honest, was selling physical video game discs in dying strip malls.
Right. Not exactly a growth sector.
Exactly. But then they made a massive pivot. They put that treasury into Bitcoin, riding the subsequent crypto waves to just multiply their reserves. But here's the thing. A company cannot survive on a treasury alone. You eventually need cash flow. You need a functioning, scalable business model.
So eBay is, what, their lifeboat out of physical retail?
It's the ultimate anti-meme stock. eBay is a steady, predictable, legacy internet commerce machine. It generates massive, reliable, gross merchandise volume GMV and takes a steady cut of digital transactions and physical goods shipping globally.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah, so GameStop is utilizing the chaotic, hyper-speculative capital of the 2020s to purchase the stable, boring, immensely profitable infrastructure of the 1990s internet. They are quite literally buying their own survival by acquiring actual proven cash flow.
That is a fascinating inversion. Using phantom internet money to buy fundamental reality.
It really is.
But then, if we look at the exact opposite end of the spectrum, we have Sierra. Brett Taylor's enterprise AI agent platform just raised $950 million, giving them a $15 billion valuation.
Yeah, and Sierra perfectly illustrates the dichotomy of the 2026 tech economy. Because you have GameStop using speculative wealth to buy proven legacy cash flow. But Sierra is wielding massive speculative capital based on an entirely unproven future.
Totally unproven.
They're betting that the market for replacing human customer service workflows with autonomous AI agents will be astronomical.
But a $15 billion valuation for a company that still hasn't proven its unit economics at scale, that is a massive leap of faith. I mean, the entire premise relies on the compute overhead per token dropping drastically, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. It has to.
Because right now, the inference costs the raw computing power required to have an AI continuously reason, query databases, and resolve a complex customer issue over multiple steps. Those costs are just staggering.
You're hitting on the absolute core tension of the AI service model right there. If a human customer service representative in, say, an overseas call center costs a company $15 an hour.
Right.
But running the multi-step AI agent pipeline requires $20 an hour in raw cloud compute costs just to generate the tokens and hit the vector database as well. The business model collapses.
Doesn't make any sense financially.
Exactly. Investors are throwing $1 billion at Sierra with the absolute faith that hardware efficiencies will improve so rapidly that those inference costs will just plummet, allowing these agents to replace entire corporate departments overnight.
But beyond the financial speculation, Sierra's valuation relies entirely on one massive technical assumption, too, that AI agents can actually do things.
Right, execute actions.
Not just generate text, but physically interact with systems. Read emails, check calendars, cancel physical orders, issue database refunds. How is that software plumbing actually being built? Because getting a large language model to reliably talk to a legacy corporate database without hallucinating or just breaking the API connection, that sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Oh, it has been a nightmare. But we are finally seeing the standardization of how AI interacts with our digital infrastructure. The engineering is really shifting from these abstract promises to concrete, standardized tools.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Google just opened its Workspace MCP server to a public developer preview.
Yeah, so MCP stands for Model Context Protocol. Think of it as a universal translator for AI agents.
Okay.
Historically, if a developer wanted an AI to, let's say, read a user's Gmail, cross-reference it with an event in Google Calendar, and then save a summary into a specific Google Drive folder.
Sounds like a standard workflow.
Right. But they had to build custom proprietary integrations for every single one of those APIs.
Yeah.
It was incredibly brittle. If Google tweaked a single endpoint, the whole agent pipeline shattered.
Oh, man. But by standardizing this MCP server, Google is giving developers a direct, unified interface. The agent doesn't need to learn a dozen different API languages anymore. It just plugs into the MCP, which handles all the translations securely.
Yes.
It's kind of the equivalent of replacing a tangled drawer full of proprietary charging cables with, like, a single universal USB-C port.
That's a great analogy. And the broader implication of that standardization is just immense. It puts tremendous pressure on closed proprietary integrations to justify their existence. If Google is providing a clean public standard for autonomous agents to interact with the world's most ubiquitous workspace suite, the barrier to entry for building these complex AI workflows drops dramatically for independent developers.
And speaking of independent developers getting powerful new tools, the newsletter also dives into a new Python orchestration tool called DaisyDAG. Now, a DAG, for anyone tracking the data engineering space, is a directed acyclic graph.
Right. It's essentially the mathematical blueprint for automation. In AI pipelines, orchestrating steps in the correct order is critical.
Like an order of operations.
Exactly. The agent must successfully authenticate the user first, then query the database, then run the inference, and finally draft the email response. The graph ensures the engine knows exactly which tasks can run in parallel and which must block and wait for a previous step to finish.
I like to think of it as an automated factory assembly line. You absolutely cannot drop the engine block into the car until the chassis has been welded together right, and the conveyor belt doesn't have a reverse gear.
Perfect way to look at it.
But historically, to manage these pipelines, developers had to rely on massive, resource-heavy platforms like Apache Airflow or Prefect. DaisyDAG is making waves because it's completely dependency-free and lightweight. It allows independent builders to drop a robust orchestration engine right into a small AI agent pipeline without needing a massive server just to run the background management.
This raises an important question about the modern culture of software development, though. We have tools like DaisyDAG enabling incredibly rapid, lightweight building, but there is a hidden systemic danger in this relentless, industry-wide rush to ship fast.
Yes, the newsletter touches on exactly this with a warning about Bun. Bun has been this absolute darling of the JavaScript developer world recently.
Oh, huge hype around it.
Right, promising lightning-fast performance times that just blow older runtimes out of the water.
Okay.
But there's a very careful post-gaining traction that raises some major red flags about Bun's stability guarantees. It points out the severe speed-over-correctness trade-offs that seem baked into its core development culture.
Yeah, and the tension between speed and correctness is foundational to all engineering. Bun achieves its incredible benchmarks by making calculated trade-offs. Sometimes that means skipping certain garbage collection steps or ignoring complex edge case error handling just to maintain high throughput.
Which is fine for a side project, maybe.
Exactly. But when you are building production-critical applications, say, the back end for a financial clearinghouse or a hospital's patient portal speed cannot come at the expense of correctness. A dropped database write or an unhandled memory leak in a critical system isn't just an annoyance, it's a catastrophic failure.
Which is why the newsletter contrasts this Bun warning with a really fascinating retrospective from AntiRes, the original creator of Redis. He published this candid, highly technical look at the incredibly messy, years-long development process behind Redis arrays.
And Redis is arguably one of the most reliable, battle-tested pieces of in-memory data infrastructure on the planet. AntiRes's post is a stark reminder that elegant code doesn't just spring into existence. He details the painful, iterative refinement required to handle memory fragmentation, dealing with CPU cache line alignment, and the numerous design reversals they had to endure over the years.
Because good engineering simply takes time. It's the complete antithesis of the move fast and break things mantra that dominates Silicon Valley right now. When you're building the foundation of a data architecture, the absolute last thing you want to do is break it.
Exactly. But while independent developers are down in the trenches debating the merits of lightweight DAGs and the philosophical trade-offs of memory management, the very cognitive engines they rely on to build these applications, the frontier AI models are being pulled into a much larger, much darker geopolitical theater.
Yeah, this is a massive shift. While indie devs are playing with tools like DaisyDag, the absolute bleeding edge of artificial intelligence is becoming a heavily guarded fortress. Anthropic just released their new frontier model, Claude Mythos.
But not to everybody.
No, they didn't release it to the public at all. They locked it behind a heavily vetted 50-company partner wall, specifically restricting its use to advanced cybersecurity work.
The designation of frontier model is vital here. We aren't talking about slightly better chatbots that can, you know, write a marketing email for you.
Right, we're way past that.
Way past. These are models pushing the absolute boundaries of machine intelligence. They're capable of autonomous, multi-step reasoning, complex systems architecture, and potentially offensive cyber warfare. Anthropic is looking at the raw capabilities of Mythos and making a deliberate calculation that it is simply too capable, or perhaps too strategically sensitive, to release via an open API.
That's a massive paradigm shift. I mean, just 18 months ago, the entire industry was locked in this arms race to get the smartest models into the hands of as many everyday consumers as possible.
Yeah, whoever gets the most users wins.
Exactly. Now, the gates are violently swinging shut. But the contrast is what makes this moment so wild. In the exact same week, Anthropic locks up Mythos, Zuku AI, which is a major player in the Chinese tech ecosystem. They open sourced a model that actually beats GPT 5.4 on standard coding benchmarks.
Wow.
And Google quietly shipped its strongest family of open weight models yet.
We are witnessing a profound bifurcation in the ecosystem right now. On one side, you have intense corporate gatekeeping, driven by security concerns and enterprise commercial interests. On the other side, open source models are rapidly accelerating in capability.
So it's splitting the dev community.
Totally. For the independent builders out there who aren't on Anthropic's exclusive VIP list, open source is increasingly the only remaining path to top-tier machine intelligence. The gap between those who are granted frontier access and those who are denied it is widening at an alarming rate.
So what does this all mean? Especially when that gap is about to potentially be codified by federal law. We have a major report from the New York Times indicating that the Trump administration is actively weighing a framework for mandatory pre-release vetting of AI models.
Yeah, that's a huge development.
And just to be clear for everyone listening, we are looking at this purely through the lens of how it fundamentally alters the tech landscape and the release cycle.
Yeah.
If this framework goes into effect, it means developers would have to submit their AI models to a government review board, likely involving red teaming in a secure staging environment, before they could ever push it to an API or an open source repository like GitHub.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a mandatory vetting framework introduces direct state control over the innovation pipeline. You can no longer just train a massive model and release it to the world.
Right.
It means the government, not the engineers, ultimately gets to define what constitutes a safe model and what capabilities are deemed too dangerous for public consumption.
And it isn't just the U.S. government asserting control either. The newsletter notes that China's NDRC, their top economic planning body, stepped in and forced Meta to completely cancel its $2 billion acquisition of Manus AI.
And their reasoning was fascinating.
Right. Their stated rationale wasn't antitrust concerns. It was explicitly to protect critical AI talent from leaving the domestic Chinese ecosystem.
That is a staggering precedent for global M&A. We are accustomed to regulators like the FTC or the European Union blocking deals to prevent market monopolies. We are not used to state powers blocking cross-border tech acquisitions specifically to hoard human capital and sovereign intelligence.
That's totally different.
It's a direct, undeniable escalation in a technological Cold War.
The Iron Curtain of AI is falling. I mean, the landscape is fracturing in real time. Cross-border acquisitions are being killed by state planners to protect domestic talent pools.
Yeah.
Governments are drafting frameworks to intercept and test algorithms before they ever reach a public server. And the corporate giants are locking their most powerful frontier models inside secure enterprise vaults.
The era of a borderless, unregulated AI Wild West is effectively over. The dominant forces shaping how artificial intelligence is built, distributed, and monetized are now sovereignty, national security, and geopolitics.
It's a whole new ballgame.
It is. Open source remains a vital lifeline for the independent developer, but even that movement is increasingly caught in the crossfire of competing national interests.
It is a massive amount to process. Let's trace our steps back for a moment. We started today's journey looking at the hidden vulnerabilities of our daily digital lives. From a browser leaving your passwords unencrypted and exposed in its RAM waiting for garbage collection, to healthcare platforms allowing third-party trackers to scrape your most sensitive demographic data straight from the form fields.
And we saw how those underlying mechanisms scale up into massive capital maneuvers, right? With GameStop using meme stock crypto wealth to swallow eBay's reliable GMV whole, while Sierra pulls in $1 billion on the sheer speculative promise that AI agents will one day operate cheaper than human labor.
Then we looked at the plumbing, making those agents possible. From Google standardizing how AI interacts with our workspaces via the MCP, to the deep philosophical engineering battles between shipping fast with Bun and building right with Redis.
Yeah.
And finally, we arrived at the very code shaping our new geopolitical reality. A world where states block deals to protect human capital, governments demand to review algorithms, and frontier intelligence is locked away behind corporate walls.
It is a landscape defined entirely by concentration. The concentration of our data into ad tech vacuums, the concentration of speculative capital, and now the intense concentration of machine intelligence.
Which leaves us with one final thing for you to think about. If frontier intelligence, literally the most powerful cognitive tools ever created, is increasingly locked behind 50 company walls and government vetting boards, and if legacy internet commerce is being bought up by meme stock survivors pivoting to crypto, where exactly do you, the everyday independent user, sit in the power dynamic of tomorrow's internet?
It's a great question.
Are we going to be active participants building the future, or are we simply the raw data being mined to power engines we aren't even allowed to touch? Think about that the next time you type a password into your browser. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. We'll be back next time to cut through the noise and uncover the next big shift. Until then, keep questioning your assumptions.